This week on Texas Scorecard Radio, we've got a couple interviews about the criminalization of politics. We'll also hear about internet giant Amazon begging taxpayers for handouts. We'll hear about illegal aliens praising the leadership of the Texas House. And we'll conclude with a commentary from Michael Quinn Sullivan on the real reason your property taxes are so high. Welcome back to another week of Texas Scorecard Radio. I'm your host, Tony McDonald, coming to you from the 1836 studios. You know, early voting is underway in the constitutional amendment elections. We've got recommendations up at texasscorecard.com. Now for the news roundup. Let's get started and go out to Zach Maxwell. Zach, you're out in Brownwood reporting on a developing story there in the big country. Ranger College threatening old gray-haired ladies with being thrown in jail if they oppose a tax increase. Before we get started, let's tell listeners, what is Ranger College?
Yeah, thanks, Tony. Ranger College is a junior college that is located in Ranger, Texas, in Eastland County, that's actually trying to annex three of the adjacent counties, Erath, Comanche, and Brown counties.
And so this is a community college district there. They've hired these petition gatherers to go out and gather petitions and have these elections to annex three adjacent counties. And obviously the taxpayers there, a lot of the taxpayers are opposed to this tax increase for this community college in a neighboring county. And so they're starting to fight back. But really the big story is what these guys are doing to the opposition.
Yeah, that's correct, Tony. The paid political petition gatherers are actually, saying that they're working with the local DAs and the Texas Attorney General to try to bring up some sort of charges and stuff. And, you know, it's kind of crazy what all's going on with some of that
stuff. They're attacking these guys over speaking out against it. I think the complaint was that some of the opposition are telling tenants of apartments that, hey, you know, if this property tax increase takes place, we're going to have to go in and raise rent, which is, you know, just a matter of fact.
Correct.
That's economics. And so they're telling that, and they said, oh, this is some horrible big crime of the century. So has the DA reacted to it? What's gone on with that?
So the DA in Erath County, Mr. DA Nash, actually came out and debunked that, and he gave a very good write-up to the local newspaper there in Erath County, talking about how they had never even reached out to the DA to talk about any of these allegations for the anti-annexation project. So, these guys, clearly they're a bunch of liars, and they're trying to chill political speech by threatening all kinds of stuff. So
the DA has said, look, you know, I didn't receive any complaint from these people. They're just out there trying to engage in scare tactics and scare these activists away from engaging against this annexation election. But it seems like it's kind of backfiring with the activists getting more involved. Are you seeing more involvement after these attacks?
Absolutely. There's a growing grassroots number. As a matter of fact, one of the groups, the vote against the Ranger College tax annexation groups on Facebook has actually just recently grown to over 10,000 members. Well, so the grassroots movement is just blowing up over this.
Well, I'm glad to see people standing up, not letting their voices be silenced, and appreciate your reporting on that. I encourage listeners to take a look at texasscorecard.com, read Zach's full article about the things going on with Ranger College. Thank you for that report, Zach.
Thank you, Tony.
Now let's talk to Sal Ayala. Sal, you've got a great piece up about the struggling internet giant Amazon begging taxpayers for a handout. Tell us a little bit about what they're doing.
Sure, Tony. So a few weeks ago, Amazon publicly made a request for RFPs, which are requests for proposals from different sites or potential sites around the country to place their new second headquarters, which they're dubbing HQ2. Of course, the company is headquartered in Washington State currently. And so what has essentially resulted from this call for RFPs is an arms race in terms of corporate incentives and subsidies.
Yeah, so you've got this giant company, I think the 12th largest company in the world now, reaching out and saying, hey, taxpayers, we want to build a big new headquarters somewhere, and if you give us enough goodies, we'll place our headquarters there. But it doesn't necessarily seem like it's such a good economic deal.
Yeah, these types of things typically aren't. And so let me just go over real quick. In their call for RFPs, Amazon actually explicitly describes what they're looking for. And they say, quote, we're looking for you to outline the type of incentives, including land site preparation, tax credits, exemptions, relocation grants, utility incentives and grants, permitting and fee reductions. So they're looking for the entire tool bag of economic incentives. But as we've written about previously,
these are handouts from taxpayers.
Yeah, essentially. I mean, sometimes they're actually tax dollars going towards the company. A lot of times in the case of tax abatements, they're getting breaks that other companies aren't getting to move to that area.
And they put a burden on, you know, local services and police, fire, you know, all the, you know, whatnot of local government, but then they're not paying their share. So, you know, who pays it? Well, you know, mom and pop stores pay it. They're one of the biggest recipients of these kind of abatements, right?
That's right. According to different studies that have been conducted on Amazon's use of taxpayer subsidies, they're getting somewhere in the range of $1.24 billion that doesn't even include sales tax breaks along with other tax abatements. And in the state of Texas alone, that includes 20 facilities that are subsidized to the tune of $66 million in taxpayer support.
Wow. And so are all of the cities, you know, putting their hands out, hey, yeah, you know, come to us, or some of them saying, you know, I don't know if this is really such a good deal.
Yeah, so in Texas alone, we've got cities like Frisco, San Antonio, Austin, Dallas, El Paso that were considering, at least initially, putting together proposals. But then in the most recent days and weeks, we've seen a spate of different cities, including San Antonio, but also San Jose, where the mayor and maybe other city officials are coming out and just saying directly to Amazon, look, we'd love to have your business, but we don't think we have the package of incentives that will be able to compete with other large cities.
Yeah, it isn't worth it for our taxpayers to just dump cash on this.
That's right. In fact, the mayor of San Jose actually called them a waste of taxpayer money, a bad deal, in his letter.
Wow, sounds like it might be right. Appreciate that report, Sal. I'd encourage listeners, you know, we didn't even scratch the surface on the numbers. I encourage listeners to check out Sal's piece at texasscorecard.com. All right, now let's pull in Austin Goss. Austin, I wanted to talk to you about an article you did about illegal aliens praising the leadership of the Texas House over their defense of a policy called in-state tuition for illegal aliens. What's the current policy? We're talking tuition at universities. What's the current policy at universities in Texas?
Yeah, currently, illegal immigrants who are living in Texas and graduate from Texas high schools are eligible for in-state tuition to Texas public universities.
And the House leadership, and a little backgrounder for listeners who maybe don't know, the Speaker of the House and the people who run the Texas House are very liberal Republicans, kind of connected with the pro-amnesty business lobby. And they have kind of effectively killed any effort to reverse this in-state tuition for illegal aliens policy over the last several sessions. Isn't that right?
That's correct. Just this past session, we had House Bill 393 filed by State Representative Jonathan Stickland, which would have ended the policy altogether. And like you said, it's not necessarily what they have done to keep the policy. It's what they haven't done to change the policy. That HB 393 would have ended it and never got a hearing or the time of day in the House.
Yeah, and so what they're doing is pledging, hey, you know, look, if you elect us, keep us in place here in the House, we'll stop these things. We won't even let, you know, people come and testify and say they support them. So conservatives are kind of frustrated by that. A lot of conservative groups want to see this policy go away, argue it violates federal law that says you can't give benefits to illegal aliens over citizens. Yeah, obviously, we're not giving in-state tuition to citizens from, mm-hmm. you know, other states, but kind of see this as a magnet for illegal immigration. Isn't that right?
That's correct. And, you know, like I said, it's something that they haven't necessarily helped in the House, but it's something that, you know, Speaker of the House Joe Strauss has come out and openly supported in interviews and said how much he thinks it's a great program and stuff.
Yeah, yeah. Well, thank you for that report, Austin. I encourage listeners to check out that report from Austin on TexasScorecard.com. Learn a little bit more about what the leadership of the House is doing with regard to illegal immigration.
Texas Scorecard Radio is a project of Empower Texans. At TexasScorecard.com or EmpowerTexans.com, you can find more news and daily updates from all around the Lone Star State. You can also find updates from Empower Texans and Texas Scorecard on Facebook and Twitter, and follow Empower Texans on Instagram. Texas Scorecard's News Digest goes out weekly via email and monthly in print. Subscribe online and find more information at EmpowerTexans.com. Someone's always keeping score. We think it ought to be the taxpayers.
Well, it's good to welcome on the program Charles Blaine. Charles, in addition to your work with Texas Scorecard, you also run a project called Restore Justice, looking at criminal justice reform in Texas and across the country. And I wanted to have you in to talk about some of the reform issues involved and that are being highlighted by what's going on in the Paxton case, in the case of Ken Paxton, Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton, who's being kind of railroaded through the criminal justice system as part of a political prosecution. But yeah, I wanted to talk to you, Charles. So what's the most recent update? The most recent update, I guess, is that Attorney General Paxton was supposed to go to trial here this fall, and then his case is just kind of floating out there. It's been kicked down the road. Isn't that right?
Yeah, and it's incredibly unfortunate. You know, I mean, this case has been delayed over and over and over again. This time, like you said, he was supposed to go to case in the fall. It was actually supposed to start on, I believe it was September 11th, and then it was delayed until December. But a recent hearing then pushed that back until sometime in early 2018. So a specific date hasn't been set just yet, but it's looking like early 2018 now.
Yeah, and so basically what we have here in this case, undoubtedly, the case is unique. You have a couple of very political prosecutors who are put into this case, private defense attorneys from Houston who are appointed as prosecutors through a process that, like, isn't even in the law anymore. But they start going after Paxton for alleged securities violations, and they run through things. And it gets transferred, bounced around, moved from Collin County down to Harris County, bounced around the state. And they're set to go to trial. And, you know, Paxton's folks are coming into this hearing saying, hey, we want to go to trial. We're ready to go. You know, we're ready to defend ourselves. And the prosecutors are just able to punt it down the line. Shouldn't the defendant, didn't he have a right to a speedy trial? Like, why is that not an issue? Can you kind of shed some light on that?
Right. I mean, it is your right. You should have that right to a speedy trial. And unfortunately, what, you know, is deemed as speedy has since changed. And these trials are just continuing to be delayed, not just for Paxton, but for people, for anybody really caught up in the system. I mean, like you said before, they changed venues. So you have this kind of venue shopping aspect of it. And then you have these intentional delays just to kind of build their case and to take their time. And it's incredibly frustrating because, you know, some people who get caught up in these situations can fund this ongoing process of having their trial delayed, whether it's months or years. But there's many people who are caught in the system, as we're seeing here in Harris County recently, that just don't have the funds to do that. Or, you know, in some cases, when it's an incident when they're put in jail, they don't have the money to bond out, and then their cases are being postponed and postponed and postponed, and they're sitting and waiting. So, I mean, it's incredibly frustrating to see, and this is just a shining example of how it really doesn't matter who you are once you're caught up in the system. If it is working against you, you will just kind of get churned in the gears of it, and unfortunately, it's hard to get out of them.
Yeah, you know, I think there are a couple of takeaways from the Paxton case. First is about the politicization of the criminal justice system. We've seen this going back to the Tom DeLay case and then the Rick Perry case, and now with the Paxton case. DeLay was indicted for raising money against Democrat congressmen Perry's indicted over a veto. Paxton's indicted because he doesn't correct the assumptions of investors. He doesn't fill out a form. Kind of these things that are just not crimes. I mean, not criminal behavior. Yet, nonetheless, they're indicted. And you see, you know, it works, unfortunately. In the DeLay case, most people don't even realize he was ultimately acquitted, totally set free, but it ruined his political career. Perry, it ruined his run for president. Here at Paxton, we have Paxton fighting back and trying to make sure that it doesn't work from a political perspective. And so I think that's like kind of one element to look at. But then, you know, as the issue you raised, you say, look, if they can go after the Attorney General of Texas and drag him through the mud for years upon years, you know, basically bankrupt him personally to defend himself, you know, what about just the regular everyday citizen who, you know, for whatever reason finds themselves in the crosshairs of a prosecutor who wants to make, you know, the process the punishment? And that's one of those shocking things, is to consider someone who, you know, is put in jail on a high, you know, bond, and they can't bond out, they can't get out of jail. So they're literally unconvicted, sitting in jail, waiting for a trial date, and time's just churning by. They're not getting any access to the court to actually go in front of a jury and have a jury of their peers make a decision. It's like, how common of a problem is this, either, you know, there in Harris County, but in other places as well?
Well, you're starting to see a lot of kind of local news entities talking about this issue in a lot of major cities. I mean, we said Harris County and Houston, but there's currently something going on with the same situation in New Orleans, and same thing in New York City and Chicago. You see it rather often because these people do get put in there, and, you know, they just sit. It's frustrating because they just sit there and wait for their day in court. And you said something before, what, you know, they're sitting there unconvicted, and that is the case. And, you know, that while they're waiting, they're kind of losing the leverage that they would have if they were outside. So take, for instance, you know, employment, gainful employment, and being able to pay for a good defense attorney. They can't do that because they're locked away. I mean, hopefully, or some of them have family members who can fund things like that. But if not, you know, while they're waiting in there, they, you know, lose their job, your car, your home, and it just kind of continues to snowball. And it's a huge issue. And you are seeing it pop up around the country everywhere. I mean, this has been an issue in Harris County for a few years now, and there was recently a lawsuit filed over it, but there was a lawsuit as well filed in, like I mentioned before, Chicago and Cook County. So you're seeing these kind of class action lawsuits by these, a lot of them tend to be charged with low-level crimes while waiting for trial. You see them caught up in the system more, and they're the ones who are now doing these class action lawsuits against these counties and cities, arguing that they're simply being held because they don't have the money. But right. Another thing that you mentioned that was incredibly important, and it's that, you know, with the kind of politicizing of all of this, everyone hears when the indictments come down and when, you know, the charges are filed, everyone hears that. It's kind of like when they put out a news story and it's incorrect, it'll get thousands of shares. But then the outcome, when they correct that news story, it may have 100 shares. Or right. The outcome when right. someone is found innocent, you know, they don't blow that up as much as it should be. And really, you're just dragging someone's name through the mud all before they have their chance, their day in court. And I think that's the worst part about this is, you know, in this instance with Attorney General Paxton, you know, you have a sitting elected official who is trying to defend his name and wants that right to do so in court while the attention is still on this issue. And they're just dragging it out and just making it look so horrible on him. I mean, it's incredibly frustrating. It's not how the system should work.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and you can see, you know, how the system's being abused in the Paxton case, because you have the media and others out there going, oh, he's under indictment and he's, you know, this and that. And that didn't really mean anything, right? Because these prosecutors don't want to test their, you know, rather harebrained theories about what he did in front of a jury and actually prove anything. They just want to kind of keep him under their thumb, is the way it seems. And so, yeah, I think it's part of it is a cultural kind of attitude shift. I think I've been guilty. I think we've all been guilty of seeing the news and you see, oh, so somebody's arrested, and you're like, oh, well, they're guilty, right? You just assume, mm-hmm, like, right. They did it, right? And of course, you don't know that. You don't really know what the facts are until they're actually presented to a jury and actually presented at trial. And one interesting thing I wanted to go back to is, you know, people get thrown in jail and they're sitting there and they can't get out. And then you end up seeing a lot of these where they'll plea bargain just to kind of they'll plea bargain for time served. I mean, there's no the system's kind of set up to secure a conviction, even and it can be in like the best interest of the person who's accused, who goes, I just can't fight the system and I have to give up. And I'm going to give up and just try and get out of here and try and move on with my life. But, you know, then they're carrying on baggage of a conviction and having issues with, you know, trying to get a job, do those kind of things. It's really can be a very abusive, a very abusive breakdown of the process.
Right. And you know, when we started Restore Justice, or when I got involved in it, that was one of the things that crossed my mind, and I really had to give it some thought. I was reading a bunch of different articles about people who were just pleading to these crimes, and they say that they were innocent. I'm just like, why would anyone, you know, admit guilt to? I mean, even if it's a lesser charge to something, if you were innocent. But you know, really, when you kind of put yourself in their shoes, and you know, you're sitting in a jail for however long, and your trial is being continuously delayed, and they keep offering these plea deals saying you can go home tomorrow. I mean, your hands are tied at some point. You want to get out of there, and if they're offering you a lesser charge, you might just take it. A lot of people tend to do that, and yeah, it's like a perversion of the system. I mean, you get in there, and it almost forces you or compels you to do something that you otherwise wouldn't. I mean, we're really left without a choice in a lot of instances.
Yeah, well, and I think, you know, even Paxton himself has kind of said this publicly, that he feels like he's fighting his own battle, his personal battle, and it's costing his family. You know, basically he's having to spend down his kids' college funds, he spend his retirement, mm-hmm. you know, basically spend all his personal wealth that he's assembled to defend himself. But he says he feels like he has to fight this battle for the defense of this kind of principle about rule of law, and to make an example that, you don't have to give in. You know, it is worth going the distance and fighting. But it does feel like one of those things where it's hard to say he has a luxury. Of course, he's aggrieved and in a, it's a really a very sad situation when you really think about it. But at least he's in this opportunity. He has this opportunity as a public figure and as a leader to stand out there and say, no, I'm going to fight back. I'm not going to just concede. Because that was what this was designed to do. I mean, the mm-hmm. prosecution was brought by political opponents. They came in. They brought this thing. And the idea was, surely the guy will resign. He'll step out of the attorney general's office. We can get one of our, buddies appointed to the spot. I mean, I think that was what was going on politically. And lo and behold, Paxton has had the guts to stand up and fight against it and go on. But, you know, he just wants to get to the trial and actually be able to present his side of the case.
Right. I mean, you don't often find people who are actually concerned about the outcome of the trial because they're worried, you know, that they're going to get found guilty out there vocally and forcefully saying that they want to move forward with this trial. I mean, you don't usually see that if they're not sure that they're innocent.
Right.
And it's ridiculous that they continue to delay it when he has repeatedly, and his, you know, himself and through his attorneys have repeatedly said that they want to move forward, you know, for his day in court, as well as for the taxpayers who are continuing to fund this. And I think it's always interesting, you know, to see kind of the resilience in some of these people who do stand up and say, I'm not going to back down, and I'm not going to, you know, accept whatever bargain you're trying to give me. I'm going to see this through. I mean, it's a similar story. There was a case out of New York with a young guy named Khalif Browder, who was actually kept in jail for 3 years waiting trial. Wow. And they offered him numerous plea deals, and he kept saying no, simply because he knew he was innocent. And he and his family had gone through so much throughout that duration that he said, you know, we've gone through so much, I'm not going to admit to something that I didn't do. I'm going to see this through. And the case ended because they just couldn't produce a witness, and they had to end up dropping the charges, and they released him after sitting in there for 3 years. But it's amazing to see, you know, the same resilience that you see in Paxton and as you see in the Khalif Browder case, where, you know, these people, they're facing, you know, very
long sentences. Severe, I mean, huge penalties.
Huge consequences, and yet they are just standing strong and saying, no, we're going to see this through. I'm not taking any deal that you're trying to cut because, you know, I want my day in court.
Well, I think that's the job that we all have to do, is to celebrate these people who are, you know, they're heroes. They're fighting for our system and for our rights. Well, thank you, Charles, for coming on and telling us about the Paxton case and some of these issues. I think that's our job. We have to go out there and put a highlight on those people who do fight back against injustice and oppression, and whether it's a high public figure like Attorney General Paxton, or whether it's, you know, some person who's accused and can't even get out of jail. But, you know, we need to celebrate people who stand up for the right things. And right. I appreciate you doing your part to do that.
Thank you.
Thanks, Charles. Last up this week, we have a commentary from Michael Quinn Sullivan on the real reason your property taxes are so high.
Yet another commission is at work in Texas studying the system that finances public education in the Lone Star State. That's a good thing, but it's not enough. Howdy, I'm Michael Quinn Sullivan with today's Texas Scorecard Radio Commentary. Since the Texas House leadership blocked property tax reform in both the regular and special sessions this year, taxpayers are in for two more years of skyrocketing property tax bills until maybe the legislature will finally address the problem. Now, we talk about the state's property tax system as if it's a singular thing. It's not. You actually pay quite a few property taxes. Property taxes are levied by the county commissioners, city councils, hospital districts, junior college districts, emergency districts, utility districts, and more and more and more. Now, the single biggest levy is made by your local school district. It makes up half to two-thirds of your property tax bill. Most of that comes in the form of the so-called maintenance and operations of the school district, listed on your tax bill as the ISD's M&O tax. The other levy from the school district is to pay those bonds that your school district's administrators, board members, and attendant sycophants told you wouldn't cost anything. The interest and sinking levy is listed as the district's INS. Texans have been so frustrated, and rightly so, with our ever-growing property tax burden that all efforts have been focused on limiting that growth. Anything done on property taxes in general, or the school finance system in specific, is, though, unfortunately, only varying degrees of a half solution. The problem with tax burdens is never the tax burden itself. The tax burden is a reflection of something greater. An out-of-control tax burden is the result of out-of-control spending. We will never control the tax burden until we control the spending. But that's going to require the kind of difficult conversations no one wants to have. We need to talk about the stadium spending that sees tens of millions of dollars poured into facilities rivaling professional sports. We need to talk about the layers upon layers of administrators who are making nearly double the annual pay of classroom teachers. Frankly, it's become readily apparent over the last two decades that public education has shifted from being about educating kids to employing adults. This must change. We need to talk about why so much money is spent outside the classroom. Now, look, having such conversations will inevitably lead to charges from the educrats that anyone participating hates children or wants to starve teachers. They don't want any light directed at the monetary black hole, which is the administrative side of public education. Yet if we love our children and support our teachers, those are exactly the questions we need to ask. Those are exactly the kind of conversations we need to have. We need to demand that school districts are first, second, and only focused on the classroom. If there is not a tangible, provable benefit between a dollar spent and improving academic outcomes, it needs to stop. Our system of public education finance isn't just broken on the revenue side, it's broken on the spending side. We cannot fix one without fixing the other. Texas school children, teachers, and taxpayers deserve nothing less. With the Texas Scorecard Radio Commentary, I'm Michael Quinn Sullivan.
Well, that's all I have for you this week. Quick programming note, I married my lovely bride over the weekend, and I'm headed off to my honeymoon, and so our good friend Carrie Cheshire will be guest hosting the program for the next 2 weeks. I'll leave all of you in Carrie's capable hands. Until then, check out the reporting we're doing on a daily basis at texasscorecard.com.
Texas Scorecard Radio is brought to you each week as a public service from the Empower Texans Foundation and in partnership with the Lincoln Institute and this station. You can download podcasts from each program and learn more at empowertexans.com.